Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Frustrated at the lack of progress in the investigation, Alexis's mother takes an unusual step. A family friend recommends she call psychic Lori Macquarie. Over the phone, Lori immediately gets impressions about a very violent encounter.
But the very first sense I got, even without a picture, just hearing Alexis's name, I felt that she was gone. I felt that very strongly. It's like a heaviness right in the middle of my chest.
I described Alexis, her personality, which was a bit volatile, very intense.
John, I thought, was lazy. I thought he was just a guy who was coasting through life, and he had absolutely no plans.
If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I'm, let's just say, open-minded about the paranormal. And I catch some flack for it from our listeners, some of our, so you would say, more grounded listeners out there. But one aspect of the paranormal where I am extremely skeptical is psychic investigators. They tend to traffic in vagaries. They're often sensationalistic. They seek the media spotlight. And often, in the worst cases, they torment families of the victims with incorrect predictions, menacing visions that later turn out to be totally bunk. And in the worst cases, they actually rip these people off for their money. And here's the real rub. They don't clear cases. They just are not an effective way to fight crime. Even if you were to say, well, some of them are good and some of them are bad, there might be a few cases where the cops will say that the help from a psychic was, you know, was helpful. But when you blow away all of the fluff around it, what you find is that rarely were these cases solved by the psychic. They were solved by really good detective work, and the psychics just play along. So I don't like psychic detectives. But this week, I challenged myself to come up with a case that was provably solved primarily through the aid of a psychic. And I found one where it seemed pretty clear that that's what happened, and it happened right here in Joe and I's backyard. It was a cool story until I started to investigate into it, and that's where things get weird. So strap in, and we're going to discuss the murder of Alexis Burke and the investigation by psychic detective Lori Macquarie.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined, as always, by
Vincent Caldoni.
And we're going to talk about psychic detectives. And by the way, if you really want to see the best psychic detective TV show ever, watch that episode of South Park the one where Cartman was the psychic detective. But anyway, let's get serious here, though. I mean, I don't take psychic detectives too terribly seriously myself.
No, not really.
I think even in
this is an interesting one.
Well, it is interesting. It is interesting. Well, we're going to go over all of our predictions and all of our prognostications and decide, you know, how helpful they really were. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about here, of course, is the disappearance of Alexis Burke. Alexis Burke, you may not have heard the name.
I hadn't heard the name before.
Yeah. So she was 28 years old, married, had a child, disappeared on or about March 28th, 1986. Mm-hmm. 3 days later, March 31st, 1986, her husband, John Burke, calls the police in Lake Oswego, which is a suburb of Portland, just to the south here. Fabulous, posh Lake Oswego. And it's not that posh.
It's like, some
parts of it are pretty posh, and some parts not so much, you know.
Yeah, the wealthiest area code in Oregon is in Lake Oswego, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's definitely some high-priced houses down there around the lake. This John Burke calls the police and tells them that his wife and him had a fight, and she had stormed off with the family car. This was 3 days before, as I just said. Mm-hmm. This is not really, you know, too shocking or out of the ordinary for domestic matters. People do that. This happens, right? But she had left the kids behind. She was apparently, reportedly, a devoted mother. She'd been gone for 3 days. Again, that's out of character for her. And he'd called all friends, all relatives to see if they had seen her or if she was staying with them, and no. So, again, very out of character for Alexis. So,
yeah,
he calls the police, you know.
And that's what you do.
And then the patrolman who went by to actually take the report said that his spider sense was tingling. He felt like his responses, his general demeanor, wasn't really appropriate for the situation. Mm-hmm. So he sort of flagged the case, and it went to a detective named Robert Lee, aka Bob Lee.
There was no evidence that any crime had been committed, and Alexis, you know, more or less, she had the right to go blow off some steam for a few days and saddle her husband with the kids while she did that. But Lee, who was by all accounts a diligent cop, still, he kind of, like we said with the patrolman, he kind of felt something was off here. And this was largely because one of Alexis's kids was just 18 months old and had Down syndrome. It was a difficult baby to care for, and Alexis was the child's primary caregiver. You know, it wasn't the type of household where the dad would be staying home with the kids, so it was just didn't seem normal for her. She was known to be really devoted to her kids, so just to leave them in the middle of the night just didn't sound like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when Detective Lee interviewed the husband, something felt very off. He came off as evasive, and he noticed that his story had shifted a little bit. Lee had the distinct impression that he was being lied to. His gut told him that John, the husband, was behind this. Detective Lee set a trap, and this is a pretty good trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it involves some cheese in a box. No, just kidding. So Bob Lee shows up at John Burke's door out of the blue, and he says, you know, it'd be cool to have our crime scene unit come by and just sort of poke around the apartment and just to see if they can find anything that'll provide a clue. And he made it seem a little vague, like, you know, one of these days, you know. And so John Burke says, you know, that's a good idea. So yeah, absolutely. Do bring them by. And what he didn't know, of course, is that Bob Lee has got the crime scene unit parked right around the corner in their van, their special CSI van. And so, he just whistles and snaps his fingers and, you know, the screeching of tires, and there they are. And Burke, you know, of course, if you're the thoughtful criminal like me, or like I would be if I were a criminal, you've already sanitized the scene, hopefully, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but apparently Burke was probably not that well-organized a criminal. He probably thought that he'd have a little time before Bob came back with the crime scene guys, but nope, they were there, like, bam, within seconds. So they were all over the house. And Bob Lee conducted a second interview right there on the lawn with John Burke, who apparently was kind of shook.
Clear, Joe, it was an apartment, not a house. But
It says on the lawn there. But
I think they were out, like, on a parking strip or something.
Okay, were they? Okay. So Bob Lee's mission was really two purposes here. There was to gather evidence, but also just to throw Burke off his guard a little bit to see if he'd slip up in this interview, which is good, you know, clever. Yeah, but unfortunately for Bob Lee, it was kind of a bust. John Burke gave up nothing new. The house did not yield any forensic results, which is, actually surprising. If you committed a crime inside the house, this guy does not strike me as the most well-organized criminal in the world. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I guess maybe he just lucked out. I don't know. So, yeah, dead end for Bob Lee. Back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to go looking for Alexis's car. Okay.
This is smart.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about missing people, missing person cases, is that it's actually a lot easier to get rid of a body than it is to get rid of a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really true, actually.
It's grim, but it's the truth.
No, it is. And Lee felt that if he could get his hands on the car, he would at least get some clues as to where Alexis had gone. And if not any forensic evidence of a murder or anything like that. And so he went off down that rabbit hole and was checking abandoned vehicle reports from Oregon and neighboring states. So, okay, at least he was doing something, right? And he was diligent.
He's on the case.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Alexis's family, they're kind of climbing the walls. They're freaking out. And they're pretty convinced that something terrible has happened to their daughter. And the investigation, at least from their perspective, seems to have stalled out. So a family friend recommends a Portland area psychic named Lori McQuarrie to help them find their daughter. The mom phones her up and is immediately over the phone. She can get visions over the phone. Lori receives visions of a horrible, violent attack on Alexis. She could see that Alexis had been murdered. And the mother is sold. Yeah, that was good. It's good work right over the telephone. So, yeah, you know, the mother is sold. She's sure now that Lori is the real deal and that John Burke is the perp. So good is Lori that she correctly reads the personality of the Burks without even seeing like a picture or something. She sees Alexis as a vibrant, devoted mom, but also someone with a fiery temper. She sees John as a lazy man and an aloof father, which this actually checked out pretty well.
Well, maybe. If I were a psychic and I'm called by somebody saying, well, you know, well, our daughter's missing and her no good son-in-law might know something. And then I would immediately say, you know, like something exactly like this. Oh, yeah.
He's true.
He's not good enough for that. And most how many parents think that the hubby is good enough for their daughter?
That's true.
I mean. Yeah.
And I what I will say is that, you know, there is there, you know, the mom agreed that Alexis did have a temper and it is a fact that John had been fired from, I think, basically every job he'd ever had except for one.
Yeah, he was working for his dad finally, right? Yeah,
exactly.
He got that job he couldn't be fired from. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently he was even pretty useless at that job. He didn't show up very much and, you know, but he was the son. So he got to keep it.
Christ.
And he also kind of just left Alexis to the parenting. She also correctly identified what a likely cause of it, what the parents were suspecting was a cause of the argument, which is about two distinct but related things, finances and then drugs and alcohol. She correctly called, this is Lori McQuarrie, called that Alexis had recently sobered up, but that John had not. And she predicted that Alexis is not in Lake Oswego or the Portland area. So this, you know, she's starting to sound kind of legit. They were having troubles with money and that John was, I'm not sure what he was doing, but having some involvement with drugs and alcohol that was upsetting Alexis. The parents knew this to be the case. So it's not so bad.
Okay. Yeah. Although again, you know, this is my skeptical side. It's like, you know, this is probably there for a lot of marriages from especially people in their 20s. Finances are probably a big issue, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a no brainer there.
Yeah. And on the show, Psychic Investigators, which we'll talk about, is one of the major sources for this episode. Even Lori McQuarrie says that's an easy guess. You know, you pretty much can say, are a couple fighting? What are they fighting over? Money is probably the first thing out of your mouth.
Yeah, this is a real Cartman moment, but at least she was honest enough to acknowledge that.
Yeah,
that's good. Good on her. And by the way, Lori McQuarrie has a website.
Yeah, she does.
She does. We'll tell you what it is at the end of the episode, in case you want to go check it out. So meantime, our detective, Bob Lee, gets his first real break. The Burke family car has been found at a rest stop about 12 miles north of Vancouver, which is just north of Portland. And actually, I'm familiar with this rest stop. I have stopped there many times, not to rest, but to, well, do the other thing.
That's a form of rest.
And so they check it out. Lee noticed, first of all, the driver's seat was left way back in a position so far back that Alexis, at her height, would not have been able to really probably reach the pedals.
Yeah. Alexis was 5'1", according to Bob Lee.
Okay, yeah. So it almost certainly was not Alexis who had driven it to this place, right?
Nah.
Yeah.
The way Bob Lee talked about it, she literally, not just that she couldn't safely operate the car, that she probably couldn't even touch the pedals.
Yeah, so maybe she was abducted and her abductor took her there. I don't know.
Maybe.
But the key was left in the ignition. The doors have been locked from the outside. which was a lot easier to do back in those days, right? By the way, as somebody who, by the way, has locked himself out of his own car, that's me. I can tell you that's quite easy. These days, it's a little harder. I really like that. That's one of the best things about modern cars.
Yeah, right.
It's harder to lock yourself out of them. Although I'm sure I'm going to figure out a way one of these days, but so far I'm doing pretty well. So the keys were in the car.
She also had a map of Eastern Washington. I think it's Cheney, Washington was circled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cheney, is that spelled like Cheney?
Yeah. I believe that's Cheney, southeast of Spokane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Bob Lee was not buying this detail. I mean, when I'm going somewhere, you know, and like, so let's say I'm going to drive to Seattle. Or let's pick something a little more complicated than Seattle. Let's say I'm going to drive to Madras Eastern Oregon. I might get out a map and look at the map. I'm not going to circle the town of Madras on the map. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's kind of an obvious dumb red herring, you ask me, to circle the spot on the map. You know what I mean? And so Bob Lee was not fooled, I guess.
Yeah. Right? He also thought that the keys in the ignition were a setup, like he wanted the car to be stolen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, you know, it might be that, you know, whoever left the car abandoned at that spot, it might be that he intended or she intended that the car to be stolen. Mm-hmm. And then without even thinking, push the button on the door lock and slam the door shut and lock the door,
right,
making it harder for somebody to steal the car.
Maybe. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, why do you abandon a car at a rest stop and leave the keys in unless you intend for it to be stolen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I guess whoever did it could have taken off on foot, but that also likely means that there's more than one person involved because now you're on foot at a rest stop and, you know, the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, unless somebody is, like you say, has followed you. So another person involved. Yeah.
So Lee brought cadaver dogs to search the area around the rest stop and a full forensic unit to process the car inside and out. But he really didn't get anything from it. So again, just to check in on where we're at, this all looks really bad. But Bob doesn't even have evidence of a crime having taken place at this point. And it's just an abandoned vehicle and some odd behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, but that's probably getting the cadaver dogs out. It's not a bad idea. What if she had some sort of break, you know, and locked herself out of a car and just sort of went, you know, went over the edge because of this. It was the last straw. And so she wanders off into the woods, you know, outside the rest stop, you know, kills herself or something. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's also worth noting that by John Burke's own admission, she was wearing nothing but night clothes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. And so that could imply, if we believe John, it could imply that if she did get locked out of her car, she could have frozen to death out there. She could have died of hypothermia. So I think it was a smart idea to bring in the dogs, but they didn't find anything.
Well, it's the end of March. It's not winter, but it's still rather chilly outside around these part of this part of the world.
It'll be down in the 40s at night in a place like Washington State, and it can be wet. It'll likely be raining, and you know, 40.
It almost certainly is going to be wet. Yeah. So
that's hypothermia. So I understood his concern. I think it's good they did that, but they didn't find anything. And it's right about this point where Alexa's mom reaches out to Detective Lee, and she tells him about the sessions. She tells him about the sessions she's been having with Laurie McQuarrie. Mm. Lee is not impressed. Mm-hmm. He didn't really believe in psychics and wasn't going to waste his precious time as a cop in a very sensitive investigation on a snipe hunt with some crystal ball gazer. But at the mother's insistence, Lee agrees to meet with McQuarrie. And so they go out to what was probably a pretty nice lunch because it is Lake Oswego after all. Yeah. And they get to talking, and Lee is actually really impressed with how much about the case that Laurie has been able to just sort of envision. She has details that Bob hasn't even shared with this family that she seems to be getting right. It's now that Laurie begins to put up. She starts giving some fairly concrete details.
Mm, yeah, visions. Yeah, she does have visions. Mm-hmm. A little bit of background on Laurie, by the way, and you can get this off of her website, her bio. It's a very brief one. She was 18 years old. She had a horseback riding accident, was thrown from a horse, hit her head, and spent 3 weeks in a coma. And when she woke up from the coma, she found that things had changed a little bit. So she suddenly started having visions, some of them quite horrible visions. And some of these visions actually came true. For example, a family member who died in a nasty accident that she had foreseen. things like this. That's when, so, yeah. I guess if you want to be a psychic, you want to go riding a horse or get a head injury somehow. I don't know.
But, bell rung.
Yeah, get your bell rung. But she's having visions about this particular case, and she keeps seeing the number 15. That kind of caught Lee's attention, since after all, the family car was found about 15 miles or so north of the Burke home, right? And maybe that explains the number 15. I don't know.
Good.
She sees an older, larger American car with a lot of trunk space, but this is off base, at least for now, because the family car was a fairly compact foreign car. The one that they found at in the rest area, it was a big old American, boat like that.
Right.
See, but that's off. But, you never know. That could change. Maybe she's right. We'll find out. See, what else? She also says that John's younger brother, whose name was Kelly Burke, was involved with the crime, which is the cops had not even thought about him at this point, although they had interviewed him.
Burke immediately, he called all of because Kelly was best friends with his brother. They were like really close.
Yeah.
So Bob Lee made sure to call Kelly Burke and interview him, I think just over the phone, but to get in touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But Kelly was not a suspect, I don't think. It was more what do you know? And, things like that, yada, yada. But they had this interview. It turns out Kelly had been playing football for college all the way down to Southern California at the time of the disappearance. So, I don't know. Lori's like 1 for 3 at this point. So Bob Lee is still not convinced. So,
So Lori, she does something kind of crazy, because this lady, you see her in these shows she's on, she's got some chutzpah.
Mm-hmm.
See, John Burke was moving out of the family apartment, and he was going to, I don't know if he was either going to sublet it or it was just his job to show it to whoever was moving in, but that's what he was doing. And Lori just goes and makes an appointment to view the apartment. She really wants to be alone with this dude who she suspects is a murderer.
Mm-hmm. Well, why not? She probably took a gun.
I don't know, she brought something.
Yeah.
She gets there to view the place and notice that he's scrubbed the apartment of all traces of Alexis. No pictures, no possessions, nothing. You wouldn't know she ever lived there.
Mm.
And when Lori goes to leave, she shook John's hand and immediately, flash, gets a vision of John choking Alexis to death inside the apartment. She says she can literally feel his hands around her neck.
Ooh.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
That sounds dramatic.
It's dramatic.
So she tells Bob Lee about this, and Detective Lee is not happy about this visit, actually. She felt this was endangering the investigation. But for Lori, it kind of opened the floodgates, because now she's getting all kinds of visions of the crime and images of where the body is buried. She continues to talk with Bob Lee and reveals a new vision, a place called Bell's Landing. which I had never heard of. There's a lot of this landing and that landing here in Oregon. I mean, there's a lot of places. We have rivers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of landings. Typically, it's a landing where there was a ferry back in the old days. And mm-hmm. the ferry has long since gone, been replaced by a bridge or God knows what. But, you know, it's still mm-hmm. called something, you know.
Yeah.
John's Landing or Fred's Landing or Joe's Landing or Vincent's Landing, you know. But
Landing, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But so there are a lot of places in Oregon called Landing, like I said, but none called Bell's Landing. But Lori's insistent about this Bell's Landing stuff. So she and Bob Lee begin going on little road trips to see if anything lines up with her vision. And I think Bob's ulterior motive is Lori was actually kind of key. I think he might have been working another angle. You know what I'm saying? You know,
don't spoil anything.
No, but I don't know, man. Maybe that's it. But she really does believe that John buried Alexis in a shallow grave near a small creek, or as we say,
creek.
Although again, that's pretty easy. I mean, you know, most of these times, people bodies do wind up in shallow graves, and here in Oregon, there's small creeks everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Western Oregon, if there's an unpopulated abandoned area, there's probably some water running through there of some kind.
Most likely, yeah. But although this next point, though, is an interesting one. She said that the body was located where John could watch over her.
Mm.
So that's kind of weird and creepy.
It is.
It was also near a building, but it was a strange building, at least as far as Lori was concerned. It wasn't a place that you could just walk up to. But presumably, I guess what she's talking about there, it wasn't just like some little retail or office or something like that.
Yeah, it was like set off the road.
Yeah, it was kind of set off the road. It was not a house, was not a business, didn't have windows, didn't even really seem to have much in the way of doors. So that to me sounds like, you know, maybe your basic industrial property.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. Yeah. By now, Bob and Lori, they're starting to connect, and he's beginning to trust in her vision, even though he's sure she is definitely wrong about some things. And she tells Lee at this point that she has a vision of John eating lunch and smoking cigarettes, watching over Alexis's shallow grave. She didn't say this, but I picture him like taking a sack lunch out to where the site is. She tells him that John has told people about the murder and about the site, and that people, especially Kelly,
the brother,
aided him in disposing of Alexis. But see, this gives Lee a bit of inspiration. Lunch, the strange building, the crick. This all sounds like the industrial property where John works, the one that his father owns.
Mm.
But of course, that's not enough for a search warrant, right?
we got some crazy psychic lady. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah. But
meanwhile, Lori has a vision that John will be ratted out by an ex. Like an ex-girlfriend. Mm. And it takes a long time. We're starting to get, I don't know the exact timeline here, but I think we're starting to get like a year from the murder by this point.
So John was that stupid that he told his ex about this? He was that friggin' dumb. Wow.
John's small aside, in the Psychic Investigators episode, they refer to him as the Portland Strangler, which is funny because he did not live in Portland.
Yeah.
Most people you call the place name X, you know, typically they like Jack the Ripper killed a lot of people. He didn't just rip one person.
Yeah.
I don't think this man deserves a name like the Portland Strangler.
He's nowhere near
that diabolical. He's utterly disorganized.
Yeah. And just dumb. I mean, for Christ's sakes, he tells his ex, you know, I mean, for Christ's sakes.
Well, I think he actually might have been dating her at the time. It wasn't necessarily his ex, but then they broke up and now she's got this information.
Oh, I see. Well, still when you're dating a chick to just say, I killed my ex-wife, you know. I mean, that's just, I don't know, man.
No, man, not a brilliant guy.
No.
But so the way this all happened, though, is it kind of happened in this weird game of telephone where the ex told a girlfriend or a roommate or whatever who told a friend who told a friend who told a friend, six times removed until one of these women tells her dad, who calls the Portland Police Department. Portland Police then calls Oswego Police, who manages to trace all this back down the chain to the ex-girlfriend. And which probably wasn't like really easy. Like if you think about like 1980s technology, you couldn't just look her up. It's probably a lot of.
I probably had to actually call people or even go see them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So she tells Lee that Burke had told her that he strangled his wife to death, which lines up with Lori's visions. But he didn't really tell her much more than that. And I think by this point in his life, Burke was doing a lot of drugs.
Oh, so, that might explain the stupidity then, I guess.
Yeah.
he scrambled his brains.
Yeah. I hate to, you know,
commit an act of libel against this wife killer. But I don't really have that on good authority, but I think he was kind of spinning out of control from, that's kind of the impression that I get.
I gotcha. That makes sense.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, Bob Lee finally has something to work with here. He decides to get the ex to call John Burke up, and he's able to get a warrant to tap this phone call. Doesn't lead to a lot, but the ex reveals another really interesting detail. Whenever the ex and Burke drove by a certain portion of the woods behind his father's plant, she would notice a visible shift in John's demeanor. And the description of that place lined up pretty well with Lori's predictions. There were woods, a small stream, and it was close enough to where John worked that he could take breaks and just walk out there, eat his lunch, and watch over her grave, as yeah. was his wont, which, again, is creepy and weird, but okay.
Well, as Lori talks about it in the interview on Psychic Investigators, she says that, you know, this was also partly how he can comfort himself. If the grave is there and not disturbed, he knows he's in the clear.
Yeah, I understand wanting to go check on the grave, but still, you know, that's just
sitting
like
around eating your lunch. Yeah,
it's like weird. You know, when I finally publish my book Crime Committers 101, that's going to be one of the first things, is that when you get rid of the body, you don't do it anywhere close to where you live, where you work, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, far away. And this guy had transportation. There's no reason he needed to bury it right next to where
he was thinking. yeah
And by the way, shallow graves are out. Okay.
Yeah, none of that, guys. Take the time.
Yeah, take the time, do the work. You know, it's worth it. Yeah.
He was lazy. Lori was right.
Yeah,
he was.
What a bone. Yeah, seriously, what a loser. But now we've got the ex's testimony. So Detective Lee has got enough for a warrant. He brings cadaver dogs and cops to scour the area behind the plant. But this is like, you know, a large parcel of land, roughly 15 acres. So
yeah,
it's a lot of search area and a great place to stash a body. I mean, typically around here, you get, you know, trees and a lot of tangly underbrush and stuff like that. So searching it is hard. But it's also private land. So people aren't likely to just be out there walking around. So nobody's going to stumble across your shallow grave. Mm-hmm. And it was rural fairly fenced off, I think. So people just couldn't wander through there. But they searched the crap out of that property and found nothing. Not a thing, alas.
But Lori, she's undeterred. She really believes that John's younger brother is responsible in some way, despite having, a really good alibi. Lee is suspicious of Lori's claim, but now with, like a year having passed and all leads exhausted, the search is coming up with nothing. He decides that under her urging, he's going to get this grand jury summons and go down to Southern California to interview Kelly's roommates from college. Mm. Now, they don't give him much. He kind of used that to scare him, because if they wouldn't talk to him, then he'd be able to extradite them to Oregon, I believe is what the grand jury summons allowed him to do. So,
right. Especially back in the 80s, if you lived in Southern California, Oregon was a scary place that you didn't want to visit, you know.
Yeah. It still is.
It is. Yeah. Stay away. Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing fine down there. You guys can stay.
Oh, yeah.
They don't give him much, but it's just enough to cast doubt on Kelly's story. And that's enough for Lee and his counterparts to get a warrant and brace Kelly. He cracks. He lets him in that the game he was playing in, it got rained out. Kelly had, without telling anybody, left for Oregon over 24 hours before he was scheduled to, and before any of Lee's timelines had put him anywhere near the city of Lake Oswego, just like Lori had been insisting for a year.
Oh, really? So, so the psychic was right about something. Okay.
She kind of nailed that one, that at least at this point in the story, he was at least capable of being involved. So the whole time, Bob Lee is saying, no, look, we know for a fact he was playing in a game, some kind of sports game down in Southern California. We have records, we have proof. But now it's come out that he actually was here. He was in the state of Oregon.
So the alibi is no good.
So Lee gets just a heck of a deal from the prosecutors to present to Kelly. He can get off with no prosecution for his role in the crime if he takes investigators to where the body is buried and testified against his brother. And Kelly took the deal. He folded.
Wow.
Now, this is where Lori starts to look kind of like the hero.
Yeah, no, actually, no, Kelly, it does actually make her look a lot better, because suddenly she's right about the brother aiding and abetting, and he confirms basically what had happened, and it fit with Lori's vision. There was a domestic argument over John's substance abuse, which led to an explosive argument, to which no doubt Alexis is you know, fiery temper might have actually contributed a little bit, and Burke lost it, choked her out right then and there. But there was one little weird detail about this whole thing that even Laurie McQuarrie didn't predict, which is that Burke didn't move the body right away. He rolled her up in a rug and stashed it behind the couch in the apartment while pretending that she had run off. So for, I don't know how many days, at least a couple of days, he had the body stashed right behind the couch while telling people, well, you know, asking people, have you seen her? She's missing. Where'd she go? And well, that takes some guts, Bob, don't you think? But apparently at least a dozen family members from both sides of the family had been in the apartment. The kids had been in the apartment, and with John pretending she was missing when she was actually dead, laying behind the couch.
Oh, that's gruesome.
Yeah, that is. Well, it's gruesome, and also it's insane. I mean, But again, yeah, I mean, this tells you John must not have been like firing on all cylinders.
Something's wrong with this dude. I mean, seriously stupid.
I mean, seriously. But anyway, and it is a little macabre that the body was laying there. But of course, he had to eventually get rid of the body because it's going to start getting ripe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lori and the cadaver dogs were both correct about one thing.
That's right. They had sniffed the car, hadn't they? Just to see if the body had gone into the car at some point.
And it came up clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alexis's corpse had actually never been in the family car. Burke dumped it. Burke had dumped the car while the body was actually still at the apartment. Kelly, his brother, borrowed their father's 1970s Lincoln because it had a really huge trunk space, you know.
Oh, yeah. 70s era Lincolns. Oh, my God. I mean, those things were as big as an RV.
Half a two apartment in the trunk. Those
things were huge. Yes.
So it's pretty much exactly what Lori had envisioned.
Yeah. An American car with a huge roomy trunk.
Right.
Yeah.
And the whole time, Detective Lee's telling her, look, that none of these people own a big 1970s era American car. They all have these little, you know, compact cars. And but that one was a part of the case, and they hadn't noticed it. The two brothers had taken the car to the property where this it's like a metal processing plant. I don't know what they do.
It's on the west side, though, right? Beaverton area, kind of out that way. Yeah. So quite a way, you know, not quite a ways, but a ways away from Lake Oswego.
Yeah. They buried Alexis shallowly. 75 near the streams and next to the industrial plant where John worked. So she pretty much nailed it. She even predicted correctly that her head would be oriented toward the stream, and it was. I mean, that's a very specific detail.
That is pretty specific. Although, again, I can't give her too much credit for the shallow grave stuff because all these idiots always
shallow graves.
They always do that, you know. Bodies are never found in deep graves. You know why? Because, well, those bodies are just not found.
I was just going to say,
they are not found. But Lori did. She did actually nail many of the details of this little mystery pretty well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can't all just be coincidence, right?
Yep. So the day after the discovery of the body, John Burke was arrested, and I believe he was sentenced to life in prison.
I heard he only served about 13 years, though, actually.
That is, so I've heard it, there's some things, so this is going to be a two-parter, guys, and there are going to be some things we talk about, because I've heard some contradictory evidence, but I guess if you got, you know, if you're talking 20 to life, and then you get 7 off for good behavior, that's a pretty common sentence, but I don't know. I heard that he got life, I heard that he just served 13 years, I heard the car was left north of Portland, I heard the car was left south of Portland.
Yeah.
But we're going to get to those odd things about this case in the next episode, because trust me, they're freaking weird.
There are some odd things about it, one of which is, like, I did actually a little looking for more information about John Burke and his time in the Oregon State Penitentiary, and I didn't find anything. It's actually a lot of details about this case are actually very hard to find, which is weird, because here's the deal. We live in Portland, which is a slow news market, and something like this would be considered a fairly sensational crime around here.
Oh, in the 80s, this would have been massive.
It would have been all over the place. And, again, when you told me you wanted to cover this story about Alexis Burke, I was like, who? Didn't ring a bell at all. And it should have rung a bell, but it didn't.
You think, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that there is that question of why is there no information out there about this case?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little weird.
We're going to get to that. But before we do, I do want to point out that by Bob Lee's estimation, about he estimated that Lori told him 30 things. I don't know what those 30 things are. Mm-hmm. 30 yeah. things about this case, and that 28 of them were vindicated in one way or another.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. And the family got justice. Alexis got justice, and kind of a happy ending. I mean, not really, but as happy as you can get in a case like this, I guess. And of course, here and the best part of all is that Detective Bob Lee and Lori McCrory fell in love and got married and are apparently still married to this day. I actually contacted Lake Oswego police and they confirmed that Bob Lee had been a detective there. He only retired several years ago. So they are, they moved to a place down in Eastern Oregon, kind of near Redmond, I think.
Is that where they're at?
I believe that's where they're living right now. Yeah. Apparently they bought a patch of land and built a house where they're living happily ever after. Yeah. So good for them.
Good for them.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to get to sort of like we're going to do like a special episode, a bonus episode where we break down possible theories. And if this sounds all a little pat, I don't want to over promise and under deliver, but I think you will find that things get pretty wild in me and Joe's investigation into this. So please, I'm imploring you to stay tuned and check out our follow-up episode that we're going to post later this week.
Yeah. By stay tuned, it doesn't mean like keep listening to your iPod now, but because it's going to be a few days before the next part of this comes out. Yeah.
Tune back in is what you should do, unless you're listening to this in the future, in which case just go to the next episode.
Exactly.
Yeah. Shotgun it all.
Exactly. Binge. Easy. Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Yeah. So, okay. But until a couple of days from now, we're going to take off, but I want to leave you with a few cool things like, our email address so you can contact us and all kinds of stuff like that. And of course, the usual plea to leave us a rating and a review, wherever you're downloading this podcast from, please do that. We would appreciate it.
Yes. Give us a review. It really helps us grow, helps new people.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's see, what am I forgetting? Okay. I think I've covered it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
All right. So we'll see you in a few days.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. All right, folks. Toodaloo. Bye.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Ah, psychic detective. Da 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 da. I'm just the Q. It's a QM production. Psychic detective. A QM production.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? Apparently, Lori McCrory.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Enough of that. Let's.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.